It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock, and this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on this holiday weekend, unlike the vast majority of our competitors, I'm sure, who are probably playing reruns and boring their audience to death.
But we will try to do a good day to do it, because it is kind of ugly out.
Well, it is, but that's
like
when,
winter.
But that's when people stay home and listen to the radio, isn't it?
I suppose, yeah. No, yeah. I just think I could be at the pool or barbecuing, but not really.
I was just shocked yesterday. It was a little chilly. We don't live all that far from the beach, a mile one way or the other. But we weren't getting the brunt of the wind until we went out shopping in a place that was pretty close to the water. And the wind that was coming off there, I was actually considering having brought a jacket would have been a good idea. I remembered it's late May in Florida.
I have mine with me.
Yeah, and it could be 3 days, it could be a week, it could be two, when we'll be complaining because it's too hot and humid. So I'm loving it, absolutely loving it. Anyway, enough of that. We are here as usual on this occasion. We always have something good to say about veterans and such, but it's kind of an important weekend, at least a long weekend, and I hope everybody remembers exactly what it's about, because sometimes it kind of gets lost as to the purpose of what we're doing for 3 days. So go have a good time, but remember. Now, it's been another interesting week. This is the strangest year. I keep trying to think of something really intelligent to say, very descriptive, and it keeps coming out, this is the strangest year.
That it is. And
what can you find in the world and in the market and whatever that has any consistency to it? And the answer to that is, we haven't figured that out yet.
Well, actually, that's not true. The NASDAQ has been very consistent this
year.
That
is true.
It has gone up, and it has gone up quite a lot, actually. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit, but mm-hmm. Right now, the Friday rally really made it feel like a great week. It wasn't a great week. It was an average week, but mm-hmm. It made it feel like a great week because the futures were actually in the red when I looked Friday morning.
Yep.
And then things opened and just started turning positive and kind of just never looked back. It was a pretty strong buying rally. I think they blamed it on the debt ceiling negotiations, but that just seems ridiculous because everybody knows they're going to get that done. And there was no real news about it on Friday except like, I don't know, maybe they
Janet Yellen said, well, we might have four extra days.
Yeah.
Which she could have said four extra months and been closer.
Four extra days. We already knew that anyway.
Of course.
That June 1st deadline was a total farce.
And then, you know what June 15th is.
Yeah, that's when all the payments are due.
It's a flood of money.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. This whole thing is ridiculous. It's political theater. Ignore it is my best advice. Mm-hmm. There will be some choppiness and trading around it. And there was this week, but it is all a bunch of BS.
Both sides also said, we're looking like this is coming to a head.
That was the inevitable outcome. I know on Monday or Tuesday, I guarantee you they'll say something the opposite. The market will go down and then someone else will say something positive. It'll go back up. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's a tempest in a teapot at best. No one is going to default on the debt, nor do we have to.
I mean, even our current moron-in-chief would not be the one president in history to let the U.S. default on their debt.
He's already got the lowest economic rating of anybody in recent history. You want to make that worse or not?
Want to add that to your growing list of failures?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Exactly.
But this week did follow the current trend of the NASDAQ pushing higher, the S&P sort of range trading, and the Dow losing ground. So we've seen a bunch of this lately. I know that things are tilted towards growth, but why the Dow is struggling so much is kind of a mystery to me.
But it does, we pointed this out recently, it does bring back that old thing about measuring the market with only 30 stocks is not really the best thing to do if you want to know where you're headed.
Yeah, but the ironic part about all this is that if you look at the S&P 500 normal index, which is cap-weighted, and you look at the S&P Equal 8 index, which is not cap weighted, everything carries the same weight, that the S&P Equal Weight index is down while the S&P cap weighted is up. So large caps are clearly outperforming small and mid caps. But then you look at the Dow and it's negative.
Yeah, and so that's the big caps.
What, that doesn't make any sense. It
was just one more way that I think the world is just out to confuse us this year.
For sure.
Keeps us on our toes, though.
I did like seeing a strong rally into the holiday weekend, though,
yeah.
Because there wasn't a lot that changed this week, and it was just yet another signal that that people are bullish on stocks and wanted to hold equities over the long weekend. So that's a great news, really.
It is.
Excuse me. The Dow was up 330-some points on Friday, but still managed to end the week down 1%. The S&P ended positive, but it was just by 0.3%, and all of that came in the Friday rally. And then the NASDAQ gained 2.5%, so a strong week there. The recession, so we have a number of things going on. One is the debt ceiling. That you can ignore. The more worrisome part of what's going on right now is the potential for a recession. There's just a whole host of economic indicators that are strongly saying that we're headed into recession. But at the same time, we've got a whole bunch of areas of the economy that are showing pretty amazing resiliency. And a lot of them look like they may have already bottomed and are starting to come back. So
yeah, and some of the things you've been talking about with the first-time jobless claims, that has kind of come to exactly what you said it would come to, where they downgraded the number of layoffs for last week by
right.
17,000.
Right.
So instead of going 250, 245, we're down to 229, 235.
Which is not really a worrisome number. Whereas 2 weeks ago we were like, yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Because that it had crossed over the magic level. But then that story about the fraud claims came out, and a very unusual thing to have happened.
Now, interest rates are shifting. We're seeing longer rates go higher.
Yep, and that is good news as well.
Yeah.
We also saw, I was going to talk about this in a bit, but we saw some really interesting trading and fixed income this week. I don't know if you logged on, but in midweek, the yield on short-term treasuries went over 6%. Briefly.
I heard that. I didn't actually see it on the screen, but someone on one of the business channels or something was mentioning that.
I saw it. Unfortunately, it wasn't really something we could take advantage of because these were all treasuries dated out a month. So you don't get 6%. You get 1/12 of 6%. Yeah. It, not really intriguing unless you're trading large amounts of money. And we just don't trade like that. So it wasn't something I could do, but it did pull.
If those were 12-month rates.
Yeah, then I would have jumped all over those.
Absolutely.
But it did pull up rates across the short end of the curve. And so I did manage to lock in some 5.3, 5.4 type rates. So I was happy about that. That's as high as we've gotten recently.
Yep.
So, but really interesting trading. And then by Friday, those same 6% rates were back down under 5.5%. So big swings during the week. Of course, all due to the debt ceiling negotiations. They spike because people think they're not going to be repaid and we're going to default and yada, yada. It's not, again, not going to happen. U.S. stocks had a decent week, but international stocks really struggled. Israel and China both lost over 3%, while Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Hong Kong, Italy, and the U.K. all lost more than 2%. So pretty bad week internationally. Despite all that, emerging markets managed to post a small gain on mainly on the back of a 3% gain in India and then some small gains in Mexico and Brazil. The commodities index managed to post a small gain as well, despite an 11.3% drop in natural gas. And if I sound like a broken record, it's because natural gas has been all over the place lately.
We can pre-record that segment.
Well, no, it had been on a little bit of an uptick recently, and then it just plummeted again.
Yeah, it was like the balloon was blowing up slowly when it popped.
Gold and silver also fell, as did agricultural commodities, but oil posted a small gain of 1.6%. Another area that that really didn't do well was fixed income. As I mentioned, yields spiked across the curve this week, so that meant that we saw the value of those assets go the other way. And We should see that start to reverse, especially if this debt ceiling thing gets wrapped up next week. I think you'll see a little bit of a spike in fixed income. So that would be good news.
I'm speculating that the deal will be announced before Tuesday morning.
You think so?
Yep.
Hmm.
I think there's reason to believe that both sides are right out now to the scary point, and they're just going to do it.
Okay.
The one thing that seems to be the biggest headache in the whole thing is that Democrats actually don't want people to have to lift a finger to get their welfare payments. And that's been ingrained in us since the middle 90s. And it was, of course, thrown out under the bus. But it is just ridiculous to me, and they're going to have to give it in. A little bit more when we get back, plus the trivia. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at our trivia question, which is, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Adam was just talking about the internationals and including in that Brazil. I'd been looking around a little bit. Over the last 10 years, the SPY, which is the tracking index for our S&P 500 here, has gained 203%. Pretty respectable, I would say. Followed by France, very distant second, at 100%. But what has Brazil's 10-year return been? And I'm not going to give you any hints, except it's obviously lower than second, because I already gave you first and second. That's it. All right. Anything else you want to wrap up on the market for this week and expectations for next?
Yep. There was a couple things. There was some bullish news, I thought. Semiconductors hit a new high this week. It was on the strength of NVIDIA's earnings report, which was just insane.
Yeah, it might have been just a little too much in there to really say it's a really hard and fast sign. But the numbers are the numbers, and they're looking pretty darn good.
Yeah, in case you're wondering, NVIDIA popped by 25% on their earnings day, and they're up now over 150% this year. So pretty strong year.
Did you see that Kathy Woods is backpedaling real hard now?
Well, I don't know. What did she say?
She sold it a while back, and she's trying to explain it.
Ouch.
You're talking about stepping in it big time?
Yeah, that's not good.
Although, I'm not laughing at her. A lot of people, I'm sure, did that. And I didn't ever get in it, so who am I to complain?
I think her fund is actually doing pretty well this
year.
It's
doing just fine, thank you.
The thing about semiconductors is that these days they're considered sort of the transports of the century because they lead the market forward because they go into so many downstream items from cars to computers to refrigerators these days. They all have
chips.
Even
before you transport, you got to put the chips in it.
Right. So that is why people look at it as a leading indicator of the market. So to see semiconductors hit a new high, that's a really good sign for the overall market, hopefully. The other good sign was that there's a matrix of economic indicators that's done by our research company that we use called Bespoke. It has been at recession levels for most of 2022 and 2023 because the way that it works, they count the number of negative year-over-year numbers and the amount of positive year-over-year numbers, and then they add them up. And when that comes out more negative than positive, it doesn't look good for the economy. And it coincides pretty well with previous recessions. So it's been like that for quite a while, but two of the last 4 months now have seen positive numbers for the first time in a year. So that was interesting. Those are considered, it's sort of a leading indicator of where the market's headed. So that's definitely a positive sign. Lastly, investors are still bearish on the market. So when you consider that the S&P is within 1% of its 52-week high, that's weird that investors would still be bearish.
As we always say, that's good news.
It is.
For
it
us.
Is. Normally, when the market gets within 1% of its 52-week high, investors tend to turn bullish, and they haven't. So that's a good sign for future returns in the market. So just three little notes that I picked up doing some research this week that tend to lead me to believe that maybe this market isn't done going up.
Yep. The one thing that bothers me yet, and it's got to get changed, and I'm debating what to do about it, that small caps are just sucking wind. They're just absolutely horrible.
Sure are.
And I'm just wondering if very, very soon now, perhaps on the execution of a debt limit deal, that isn't going to change. And even if it's just a reversion up to the mean, I think it's artificially overdone.
Maybe. It does tend to look like a buying opportunity.
It really does. And I'm not suggesting anything that anybody do except start reading about it and looking at it. It might just be an opportunity taking shape in the market. And you know, look over time, small caps do really well.
So if you're wondering about how inflation is affecting all of this, the answer is yes, it is. Mm. But it's in the opposite way as you might think. Since last June, the year-over-year change in the CPI has declined for, this is a record, 10 straight months. It surpassed the prior record from 1931 of 9 straight months. And the rate of inflation has declined by 4.2 points. And that is the largest 10-month decline since August of 2009. So if you feel like inflation isn't coming down fast enough, it actually is coming down very fast relative to historical periods of inflation. And one example of that is that the price of lumber has collapsed by 80% and is now down 25% below pre-COVID pricing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That said, let's talk to... Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. How are you folks doing?
Great. How are you?
Oh, good. It's a bit windy here, but the sun is out, so it's pretty.
Good. We'll take that for now.
Well, so what do you got planned for the weekend?
I'm going to work and eat. How about you?
I'd probably do it in a different order, but...
I consider those concurrent activities.
Yeah, probably so. I hear you. Okay, I'm going to take a guess at your trivia.
Sure.
1817.
Yes, he's got a good internet connection today.
Very good.
What was your number?
18.17.
That's absolutely in the right range. Mine is just a slight bit difference, but it's obviously just something that's happened the last couple of days because the data was a little old. That is true. And you did say negative on that, didn't you?
Whatever it was, it was 1817.
Well, knowing all of that, yes, it was, but it was negative for the last 10 right. years. So yes. We're going to call that good. There's a lesson in there somewhere. I'm just sure what it is.
Okay.
But it's very risky adding internationals into a portfolio. And if you're going to do it, the lesson of the week is we have adopted the hard and fast rule now that we let somebody else do our international picking. And we have an excellent international fund, and almost every client has some of it. And I've been adding on to mine lately. This guy is really good. And very inexpensive for the returns that he gets over and above all of the market averages. So there are times when mutual funds that are actively managed are a really, really sound idea for people. And this is one of them. There's no one smart enough to pick out what country's going to go up and down, what week it is. And you hear that as Adam reports the various countries. From week to week, it's just impossible to guess. But this guy he's been doing it for years, and he is very good. And if anybody wants to discuss it, they can call into our show or they can call into the office or anything. But that's the way we see it these days. It's hard enough to figure out who's making money, right?
That's true. I guess as long as in today's day, as long as you're not losing your at least – even though behind the curve on inflation, but it is what it is.
Yep, you're absolutely right, and we've got your address, and we'll take care of it. You have a great Memorial
weekend.
Thank you much. And thanks for your service.
Okay.
Leroy is a veteran of a long, long time, one of the fortunate ones who lived through it, and is now pretty actively retired. It's a good thing. It's how it's supposed to work in this country.
Two things about that. Brazil is also not just international. It's also an emerging market, which makes it even more risky. And additionally, there are other options for investing in international that just focus on developed nations. That's much less risky. I have another story to tell about international, but it's going to have to wait till the other side of this break.
And meanwhile, China's data is starting to fall asleep, too, which is hurting emerging markets. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam and I have just been discussing a little bit in the background here, something interesting that a whole bunch of you should know, and it directly relates to the discussion we were just having. So I'm going to just say, take it away.
Yeah, so my wife just got a new job, and we were picking out her 401k investment options. Obviously, she consulted with me on that, one of the few things that she trusts me on. So we went down the options, and there were some target date funds that I thought about that. So I clicked on the one that would have been appropriate, the 2045 fund, or 2050, one of the two. And, of course, much to no one's surprise, I found that they were invested a little heavily, I thought, in international.
Where are we right now on average, would you say?
About 10 to 12.
Okay. Which is aggressive for us.
For us, yeah. Which I feel is appropriate. The fund was at 39% international, which I thought was absolutely insane.
And I have done research on a lot of the target date funds over the last several years, and it's hard to find anybody who's under 30.
That's
nuts.
It really is. If you held that for the last 10 years and kept that static, the percentage, 39%, you would have underperformed the S&P by such a wide margin.
Dramatic.
What did that add to your portfolio? And to me, it's not about the risk. It's about the opportunity cost of not buying domestic.
Yeah, well, look at the numbers I gave out. 10 years in the U.S., 200%. Their closest competitor is France at 100%.
There you go. Yeah.
Now, you want to have 39% in assets that are 50% or less performing than ours at 39%. I like some in there. It's diversification. It can be a hedge. You might catch some good upswings. But we're not afraid to raise and lower that percentage by quite a bit either.
Absolutely.
And we can swing 50% on the number of or the amount of assets held in international without even thinking too much about it. Right now, we are pretty optimistic on what's going on over there. But that doesn't mean we see some kind of a burst in the European Union or something like that because, as Adam pointed out to me, they're in a heavy tax, slow growth environment. The whole thing,
and they always will be. They've set up. They've set up their whole lifestyle like that, and that's fine for them.
For them,
but it doesn't lead to innovation. It doesn't lead to high growth. They don't have what is it called? Their kids. It's like 1.2 kids per couple or per person or whatever, and so they're not even. The demographics aren't favorable, and there's just nothing about the. There's no compelling story for me to
I can't think of a country heavily. Over there that has any demographics that would make anybody very happy.
No, and definitely not.
China's losing population. Japan's losing population.
Japan's
European
in
countries,
real trouble.
They're in deep doo-doo, and it has a lot to do with their xenophobia.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They have to start rethinking the way they do business.
Well, and not just that, but who can afford to live there? I mean,
it's
outrageously expensive.
Yeah. Anyway, if those of you who have target date funds in your 401ks and so on think about it, and you should look them up and just get the asset mix that's in that and just see if it surprises you the way they're invested.
Yep.
You can make a target date fund.
That's what we ended up doing. Yep. So I just sort of put it together. I used their bond fund, their S&P 500 fund, their mid cap, their small cap. Their international fund and just put them in the percentages that I thought were more appropriate. It's the exact same thing. It just doesn't adjust automatically. You have to go in and do it.
Yeah, it sounds like our day job, doesn't
it? Yeah, a lot like
constructing portfolios out of bits and pieces rather than just farming it out to somebody because most people don't think exactly like we do, I would say, which is maybe a good thing. Who knows? I sometimes wonder. But anyway, that that was a very important point, and it came up in an interesting manner. But I've got a few minutes left in this segment. I want to get into a discussion. I probably will do it in the fourth segment here, and then it might go on for a while. I'm calling it To Roth or Not to Roth. One of the pressing issues in personal finance these days is the use of the Roth IRA, and it's a discussion that has so many moving parts. It seems simple. How much should I do to owe X number of taxes and things like that? But it's far more complicated than that. So we will do that. But before that, I had a couple things I wanted to point out. Who knew? I certainly didn't, that we have all 9 members of the Supreme Court that are Uber MAGA people.
I saw that.
Chuckie Schumer has a great way of opening his mouth and inserting a very large foot into it, and he did it again.
Yeah.
A MAGA Supreme Court.
Right. A unanimous decision about government overreach of all things.
Yeah. Now, how could you make that comment even worse? Trust me, he can do it. So his version, it's not what he's saying. It's how he chose to say it. He says, that shows that we have to pack the court. Packing the court is dynamite for politicians. They tried it once, and it didn't go well.
Wow.
And he's staying right out in the open. First,
well, not just that, but if you had a 9-0 decision, wouldn't it have just been a 15-0 decision?
Exactly.
It was a clear case of government overreach, and it wasn't even. I mean, it was so egregious.
Now
we
should talk about why, I suppose.
Go for it. Yeah.
The Environmental Protection Agency's authority has been increased, as you all know, over the years by a lot, and a few years ago, they made a very bad decision, and they allowed the government to control carbon dioxide as a pollutant. Well, I've got a lot of friends who are plants. I think everybody does down here. And if you take away their carbon dioxide, you're going to have some very unhappy plants. But all of those same plants exhale oxygen. And I got a lot of friends who are people, and that's what they live on. Now, if we start eliminating too much carbon dioxide, what are the plants going to breathe? And if the plants stop breathing, what are the humans going to breathe? This was a stupid decision, to say the least. That's my opinion, and I'll stick with it forever. But it has gone on and on, especially in the Obama administration. It's expanded into waterways. The definition of a navigable waterway has been expanded to, if you have a ditch in your yard to gather water and move it out after a big rain, so a few days a year after a big rain, it has some water in it, and then it leaves, it either soaks in or runs off. That's called a navigable waterway for the purposes of the Clean Water Act. And the Supreme Court just recently looked at that and said, that's nonsense.
Yeah, no.
Nino.
Navigable waterway. Come on.
I mean, we've got Brown, and they're probably the most liberal justice in the history of the court, and she was right with everybody else. So this is a good thing that happened, and I like to point out some good things once in a while. And this started from people who were trying to build a house on some acreage they've had on a lake for 19 years, I heard, and 15 years, I don't know which one, a long time. Mm-hmm. And they keep getting turned down because they have one of these drainage ditches, and once in a while it has water in it. And therefore, it's called wetlands. And if you remember, you probably don't remember way back, but back in 1990-ish, George H.W. Bush pledged no net loss of wetlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, that phrase has turned into the whole nightmare that we have today.
Well, I mean, okay, I see why you say that, but it's also, it does some good. But if you,
I don't disagree with that.
But you have to define what a wetland is.
Exactly.
And that is not a wetland. And the Supreme Court, every member agrees.
Yep, we gave them an inch, and they took a
and that's how government does that. They overreach on everything. I mean, it's always the case. The people are upset about COVID and everything that happened, but it's not, none of that's even important. What you need to be upset about is the clear government overreach that took place during COVID and the fact that we let it happen.
That is exactly right. So, well, this is a holiday weekend. Let's have some more good news. Sometimes you just got to do good news. There is a bill recently introduced to fix the problems with the Secure Act 2.0. And if you're a longtime listener to the show, you probably have heard us talk about some things that they didn't get exactly right. It wasn't so much their intent. It was the way it was drafted that was wrong. And one of the main things it did, of course, was to increase the required minimum distribution age. But they had a problem in the verbiage in it, that there were people born in a certain year who actually had two different required minimum distribution ages only because of the way it was written. They're going to fix that. And by the way, this is something that's done all the time. They draft a law and they get it all written up, and then people start going through it and they find little problems and they just routinely go back and fix them. But these were really kind of important. So now the one thing that I didn't like, and it's going back in there, but they had a problem in the drafting. When they eliminate the ability to have catch-up contributions to your plans be tax-deductible, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Not at all. But their intent was only when you are earning $145,000 or more from that particular employer, that plan, you have to make your catch-up contributions in a Roth. That's not what it wound up saying, but that was the intent. At which time, I kind of backed off and said, okay, well, that isn't nearly as bad as they make it sound. Because when the average person puts in $1,000 or $1,500 or $6,500 or whatever, and they're trying very, very hard to reduce their tax bill, you want that to be able to go in at least at their choice, and they eliminated some of that. A couple little tweaks on that afterwards, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. I'm just wrapping up for a second those technical corrections I made to Secure. That was a very good thing, and there was some confusion between the people who were using simple IRAs and also had Roths, and they're eliminating that confusion so one will not react to the other. Adam has a listener question we want to address.
I do, and this actually came in via email. It says, hello, gents. I inherited a rundown house in Sawgrass. It needs major work. My credit is terrible, but I have cash available to complete that kind of project, though I have no detailed estimate, just round numbers and a good contractor. The potential upside is, of course, not guaranteed, but it is staggering to imagine. My dad paid $67,000 for the home in 1983. Down the block, a nice example sold for last month for nearly $500,000, just to give you some numbers that we're looking at. I received a good cash offer to purchase as is that exceeded what my wildest imagination. I was totally unprepared for it, and I had not given any thought to where I would need to be in order to move it. I was just testing the waters. Family advice, which on principle I never trust, good, that's good, is to take the money and run. Easy for a bystander to offer as advice from afar. I think the size of the cash offer shows the property has at least investor value as is, and with a professional remodeling could even rival higher priced properties on my street that set weekly sales records. What to do?
Well, I'm going to ask a question because I always answer questions with questions. What is the percentage return of various projects that you put into your home?
It is less than 100 in most cases.
I'm done.
Yeah, I agree. But I think there's a couple of other things you need to consider here. One is, do you like doing this type of work yourself? Because the one way that you could actually probably make a pretty good return on this is to do most of the work yourself.
Sweat equity is a real thing.
It is. When you consider what you're paying contractors or even unskilled labor at today's rates, it's astronomical. And the fact is, They're not going to show up on time. They're going to be, everything's going to take longer than you thought. And so there's a time component of that. Although in a rising house value market, that might not be as bad of a thing.
It might
help you.
Depends what you're losing on your cash that you've invested in it.
Yeah. So it's not, there is no straightforward answer to this question, unfortunately. It has to do more with where do you think the market's going? I personally think that the housing market in Northeast Florida will stay strong, but not like it's been for the last few years. It's unsustainable. You can't see the kind of increases that we've seen over the last 3 years and expect that to continue forever. I think it has to moderate, if not even soften a bit. So I do think there's some risk around that, but way less than in other parts of the country. We just live in a desirable area. People are moving here like crazy. That's going to help our housing market. I think that you really have to weigh the risk of, yes, you have a reputable contractor, but how quickly are they going to get things done for you? And the answer is not very. And I can say that with as well as just anyone else.
Experience,
yes. And my contractor was awesome. We just did a big remodel. They did everything they said they were going to do. The results is fantastic, but the time it took was just insane. It just takes forever. There's nothing you can do about it. There's more days where nothing happens on your house than where something happens on your house, and it's really frustrating. So if you think that the market is going to continue to go up and you're okay with the time, then those two things you can kind of check off in the positive column for doing the remodel. The other thing is the one that you mentioned, though, a really nice kitchen remodel. Let's say you put $150,000 into this property and into the kitchen. And what are you going to get? 80% of that? Is that a good investment? I'm not sure that it is.
What if you put in a $50,000 swimming pool?
Then you're definitely, well.
Only in Florida could you even ask that question.
Also, there's no such thing as a $50,000 swimming
That's
pool anymore.
True.
It's what if you put in an $80,000 to $100,000 right. swimming pool, and you're probably not going to get that whole thing back either.
Nope.
Even if it's the most amazing pool anyone's ever seen. Now, it might expand your buyer pool because a lot of people moving to Florida want those, but is it going to get the return on investment? No, probably not. So, you know, in this case, I would tend to go with the family advice to take the money and run, just because it's a sure thing. And if you invest that wisely over the next few years, it will probably make money for you. Whereas the other side, you may invest $200,000. Let's say the house, you got an offer for $300,000. You put $200,000 into it. If you sell it for $500,000, you haven't made any money. All you've done is waste time, waste effort. All of that. You've really only made the $300,000. If you put that in the stock market and make 6% over the next, forget that. Let's put in the money market. You can make 5% on it in the next 2 years.
So there's your opportunity cost.
Right.
So what if it takes 9 months or a year to do it? And during that time, housing does reverse. I don't think it's likely around here, but what if?
Yeah. What if you can only sell it for $450,000 and you net $250,000?
Yeah. What if you run out of money and you have bad credit?
There's way more risk on doing the project than there is on not doing the project.
Yep. I think that's the overall good answer.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what I told him. So, of course, I think that.
I was just having this conversation with a new client the other day. They asked me, is there anything else you should know? And I said, don't go buy a rental property. Real estate is not this magic way to make money that everybody thinks it is.
Nope.
People, they think it is because people only tell you about how much they made on a property, but it's not a real number. Mm-hmm. If you buy a house and live in it for 5 years and make $100,000 on it, you didn't make $100,000. You made mortgage payments. You probably fixed a roof. You probably had numerous people come out that you had to pay to do different things on the house. You may have done a renovation. There were closing costs that you're not counting. You didn't make $100,000. You might have made $40,000, and that's great.
That's why you have to be careful keeping up with your basis in the property as you do things.
Definitely.
Okay. I do want to just introduce the topic about the Roth, but I had one more piece of good news, and I'm on a good news roll. some of you are probably familiar with a fellow named Thomas Massie. He's a Republican House member in or from Kentucky. He has just introduced a bill that would help one of my bugaboos. It would eliminate any part of Social Security going into your gross income. No taxes.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. I was just going to add something to your email question.
Sure.
And that is maybe take, if I understood the setup on this, is he inherited this property from his dad, and he was thinking about fixing it up and reselling it, and he got a great offer as is price.
Mm-hmm.
The third option might be a hybrid approach, and that would be fixing it up enough to where it can become a rental. And then if he owns that property free and clear, then he would have that cash coming in each month. And as we know right now, the rental market is pretty tight.
Actually,
and
Greg,
especially in the Sawgrass area, I would imagine
yes.
that it's very desirable, commanding a premium price.
Actually, Greg, that's a fantastic idea. I really like that idea because you are you're not coming out of pocket and putting yourself at great risk. You're only doing the minimum to get it up to sort of rental standards.
But I would predicate that on I'd want to see the place before I gave that advice because there's property in bad shape and there's property in bad shape.
Yeah, so I guess that
is
makes
it a
sense
tear down or is it a fix up?
Right, and does it need the big things? Like, does it need a new AC roof? And whatever,
plumbing,
you know, structural
wiring.
Work. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Because you can't define a property in bad shape without seeing it.
That is true. So, yeah.
It's certainly a viable option, though.
Yeah, for sure.
It's hard for me to believe that there's any property in Sawgrass that's in bad shape.
Oh, I guarantee you there is. Do you know how many people live there for the last 30 to 40 years of their life and never put a dime into their property? All those properties are turning over now, and they're in huge demand.
And they're very small.
They definitely exist.
Are you familiar with Sawgrass at all, that area?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always see Sawgrass from the 17th hole every year.
Okay.
This is... this is in the Oak Ridge area. It's not in the Sawgrass Country Club area. And Oak Ridge is the oldest area, but it's probably the one that's evolving the fastest.
It's probably the hottest area for young families.
They can afford it.
Yeah, at the beach.
But the houses tend to be smaller, and they tend to be older. But a lot of them are really well constructed, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's even a bigger, question mark. Because if it's one of those old ones that was built the right way, and if it's in a good location, it might be an excellent idea.
Yeah, that's good thinking, Greg. That wasn't part of his question, but I really like the thought.
Yeah, definitely an option. We appreciate
is that St. John's County?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right, take care.
All right, thanks for the call.
Have a great weekend.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
It's a little unexpected subject matter to chew on, and we'll have another chat with the listener and see what he thinks. Meanwhile, I'll get into this next week. I'm always willing to delay because callers are always first, and we like nothing better. But we'll get into the Roth to either make one or convert one or whatever. Next week, there are a lot of potential pitfalls and more considerations than you can possibly manage unless you've really gotten into it. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful Memorial Day. Thank a service member. And, you know, if you get around to walking through a memorial plot, I guess, thank them. All right. See you next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.
AM 600 WBOP.